ever feel like sometimes the obvious choice maybe isn't the best one? Well, that's kind of what we're looking at today. Mm. We're diving into the story of King Solomon and how he came to power.
Okay.
You know, everybody knows Solomon, right?
Yeah, for his wisdom.
Yeah, famous for his wisdom.
Right.
But our deep dive today uses this lecture by a biblical scholar.
Okay.
Dr. John Oswald. And he was talking about the Book of Kings.
Oh, okay.
And he uncovers some really fascinating insights into how Solomon actually came to rule.
Interesting.
It's way more complex than just being like, oh, you're the chosen heir. Here you go.
Yeah. What I really appreciate about Oswald's approach is he kind of goes beyond that like surface level. Like
right.
Solomon, he was wise.
Right.
Okay. He frames the Book of Kings as this like whole narrative about leadership and ambition and the really often surprising ways God works through human choices, you know?
Yeah.
It's not your typical Sunday school lesson.
No, not at all.
It's got some, like, twists and turns.
It really does. So Oswald kind of breaks down 1 Kings, and he points out how these first few chapters are all about consolidating power and establishing this legitimacy for Solomon.
Right.
It wasn't just a smooth transition at all.
Exactly. And that's where it gets so interesting for me, because Oswald uses this analogy of choosing your rut carefully.
Okay.
You know? So he's saying the early decisions that Solomon makes essentially dig this path for his entire reign.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, that kind of connects to a bigger question for all of us, right? Like, do our early choices, even the ones that seem insignificant, shape the course of our lives in ways that we maybe can't even anticipate?
Yeah, that's a thought-provoking question.
It is.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of this story now.
Okay, yeah.
1 Kings chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
We've got David. He's old. He's ailing.
Yeah.
And his son, Adonijah, decides, hey, I'm going to make a power grab here.
Wow.
He gets himself a chariot, 50 men running ahead of him, like the whole nine yards.
That detail about the chariot and the runners, it's not just like they're for show or something.
Right.
It directly mirrors Absalom's rebellion, you know, another one of David's sons who tried to usurp the throne.
Oh, wow.
So it's like Adonijah is consciously or unconsciously repeating these patterns of ambition within David's family.
Oh, that's interesting.
And what I find particularly striking is that, according to Oswald, Adonijah clearly knew that Solomon was God's chosen successor.
He knew, but he tried to pull a fast one anyway.
Yeah.
It sounds like Adonijah tried to set up this whole coronation ceremony outside the city because he knew he didn't have widespread support.
Right. He knew it.
He was being sneaky.
Totally sneaky. And it makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What does it say about someone or even us in our own lives, you know, when we try to seize power through, like, backroom deals instead of earning genuine authority and support.
Yeah, and then we have this shocking betrayal.
Oh.
Joab, David's longtime general, and Abiathar, the high priest, they side with Adonijah.
Wow, why would they do that?
I know. Why would they throw their weight behind somebody who is essentially staging a coup?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's crazy.
Oswald speculates, and I find this so intriguing, that maybe they couldn't get past Bathsheba.
Hmm.
Remember Bathsheba?
Yeah.
Involved in the whole David and Uriah scandal, and that scandal ultimately led to Solomon's birth. So maybe they just like had these old wounds, you know?
Yeah.
And personal biases that clouded their judgment, even in this like super important national matter.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy to think about.
It's like human judgment is so often about appearances and grudges.
Totally.
But thankfully we have Nathan the prophet who steps in and challenges what's going on.
What a brave guy.
Talk about courage. He was risking a lot to speak truth to power like that.
He really was. And what makes his intervention even more fascinating is like his connection to Solomon.
Oh.
Oswald reminds us that Nathan was there when Solomon was born.
Oh, wow.
He even named him Jedidiah.
Right.
Which means beloved of the Lord.
Right.
So it suggests this like deeper relationship.
Yeah.
Maybe even a sense of responsibility that like fueled his actions.
Right.
But it also begs a question for us, right? Like, are we willing to be a Nathan in our own spheres of influence?
Yeah.
To stand up for what's right, even when it's, you know, uncomfortable or risky.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
It is.
But Nathan wasn't just brave. Yeah. He was also clever.
Okay.
He brought Bathsheba into the picture.
Oh, interesting.
Knowing she had this unique influence over David.
Mm.
Oswald even wonders if this was because of David's potential cognitive decline. You know, he was old.
Oh, right.
Maybe making him more susceptible to personal appeals than to, like, past pronouncements and stuff.
That raises the question, doesn't it? Was Nathan being, like, truly wise?
Yeah.
Seeking God's will above all else?
Right.
Or was there a bit of manipulation?
In how he kind of leveraged Bathsheba's relationship with David,
mm-hmm.
it's something Oswald really kind of wrestles with in his lecture.
So how do we differentiate between wise action and manipulation?
Right.
Especially when the lines can be so blurry.
Yeah, it's a dilemma I think we all face.
Yeah.
Trying to do what's right.
Right.
But also navigating, you know, complex situations where the easy path
right.
might not be the most ethical one.
It's tough.
It is tough, but Oswald's distinction here, I think, is key.
Okay.
He argues that wise action, you know, aligns with God's character, even in the methods used,
right.
while manipulation prioritizes personal gain, even if it means kind of bending the rules a little bit.
Right. So motives matter.
Motives matter.
Yeah.
Big time. But the challenge for us is discerning those motives, right?
Yeah.
Both in ourselves and in others.
Yeah.
It's not always easy.
Absolutely. And I think this is where the story of Solomon's rise to power becomes so relevant to our own lives.
Yeah.
You know, we see these timeless themes of ambition and betrayal and the struggle to make wise choices when the stakes are high.
Yeah, it's a reminder that leadership, no matter where you are, you know, it's not just about power or position. It's about character discernment and the courage to act in alignment with what we believe is right, even when it's really difficult.
Okay, so we've set the stage now, right?
Yeah.
We've got this power vacuum, a king on his deathbed,
right,
and some serious palace intrigue brewing.
Oh, yeah.
What happens next?
Well, this is where things get even more interesting, because David, prompted by Nathan and Bathsheba, suddenly remembers his oath to make Solomon king. Yeah, it's almost as if like a fog has lifted for David.
Yeah.
Oswald really points out the sudden shift in David's, you know, demeanor, this like newfound urgency to fulfill that promise that he made.
Yeah, it's like a race against time now.
It totally is, because Adonijah is out there celebrating,
right,
completely oblivious to the fact that the tide is turning against him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
This whole situation, I think, is such a powerful example of how appearances can be deceiving. Right?
Like, totally.
Like, you think you've got it all figured out, and then, bam, everything changes.
So David calls for Zadok the priest and Nathan and Benaiah. These are his, like, most trusted advisors, right?
Right.
And he gives them very specific instructions to take Solomon down to Gihon.
Mm-hmm.
And get this, he tells them to have Solomon ride on the king's own mule.
Oh, wow. The symbolism there. It's incredible, right?
Yeah.
That mule represents David's authority, his kingship.
Mm-hmm.
So David is publicly, you know, declaring Solomon as his rightful heir. It's like this masterstroke of political strategy, right?
Right.
A visual proclamation that you just can't ignore.
Wow.
Powerful stuff.
So they anoint Solomon king of Gihon.
Mm-hmm.
The music starts playing. People are shouting, long live King Solomon.
I bet that was quite a scene.
I mean, can you imagine?
It must have been incredible. Like, a moment of just, like, insane joy.
Yeah.
And celebration. Right.
Yeah.
Oswald describes it as, like, this collective sigh of relief.
Mm.
Like, a sense of order being restored.
Right.
After this period of uncertainty and anxiety.
Right.
Like, imagine being there in that crowd.
Right.
Witnessing this historic event.
You'd feel the weight of that moment, wouldn't you?
Totally.
But wait, the drama's not over yet.
Oh, no.
Back at Adonijah's party, one of his supporters, a guy named Jonathan, bursts in with the news.
Oh, I bet that was awkward.
You can practically hear the record scratching.
Yeah, total mood killer.
Their carefully laid plans
right.
just crumbling before their eyes.
Yeah, their celebration turns to panic just like that.
Wow.
And it's like such a stark contrast to the scene that's unfolding around Solomon, right?
Okay.
Like on one hand, you've got this joy and celebration.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you've got this fear and despair.
Adonijah and his crew, they scatter. I mean, like cockroaches when you turn the lights on.
Yeah, it's a complete reversal of fortune.
Totally.
And, you know, I think it highlights a crucial point that Oswald makes, right?
Oh,
ultimately, like, human ambition, it's no match for God's plan.
So Adonijah, terrified, he runs to the tabernacle and grabs hold of the horns of the altar.
Wow. Desperate times.
That's a pretty desperate move.
Clinging to the horns of the altar, that was a way of seeking asylum in ancient Israel.
Huh.
You know, it shows just how afraid he was, like he'd lost all hope of seizing power.
Right.
He goes from celebrating to begging for his life, like in a matter of hours.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's wild.
So Solomon, you know, in a show of what could be seen as mercy, right,
okay,
assures Adonijah that he's not going to be harmed as long as he behaves himself.
Interesting.
I mean, that mercy, is that, I don't know.
It's a fascinating moment, isn't it?
It is.
Solomon, like, is so early in his reign, he's already demonstrating both strength and restraint.
Right.
He could have easily had Adonijah executed.
Right.
But he chooses this more, like, measured approach. And I think that's, like, this little glimmer of the wisdom that he'll eventually become so known for.
Yeah, it's a reminder that true leadership isn't always about, you know, brute force.
Exactly. Sometimes the wisest course of action is to, like, show mercy.
Right.
And offer a path to reconciliation.
Right.
But of course, this is just the beginning of Solomon's journey, right?
Right.
As Oswald points out, like, the real challenges of leadership are only just starting to unfold.
So we've seen this, like, incredible power struggle.
Yeah.
Right. Filled with twists and turns.
Totally.
What does it all mean? Like, what are the takeaways here for us?
For me, one of the biggest takeaways is that God works through messy situations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's rarely neat and tidy. There are betrayals. There are missteps. There are moments of doubt. But as Oswald reminds us, God can use even these seemingly chaotic events to bring about his purposes.
It's reassuring in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
That even when things feel completely chaotic, there's a bigger picture unfolding.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think it also challenges us to be more discerning.
Okay.
To, like, look beyond surface appearances.
Right.
And try to understand the, like, the motives that are at play both in ourselves and in others.
Okay. So we've reached the end of 1 Kings chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? What does Oswald highlight in the next chapter?
Well, in chapter 2, we're brought to David's deathbed, and what follows is, like, this powerful exchange between a father and a son, kind of a passing of the torch, so to speak.
Okay, so we're at this, like, really pivotal moment, right?
Yeah.
David, on his deathbed, gives Solomon some final words of advice.
Right.
I'm curious, what does Oswald, like, really focus on in this father-son exchange?
What really struck me was how David, in his final moments, he doesn't just offer, like, fatherly wisdom, you know?
Yeah.
He specifically reminds Solomon of his duty, right? He urges him to be strong and to be courageous, to follow God's laws and to fulfill this dream that David himself was actually denied.
Right, to build the temple.
Exactly, to build the temple. So it's like this this charge to Solomon, you know, this like weighty responsibility that's being passed down.
Yeah, and along with that charge, David gives Solomon some very specific instructions about how to deal with some of the, shall we say, problematic figures from his own reign.
Okay.
Joab, Shimei, you know, it's a bit of unfinished business.
It is. It's like tying up loose ends.
Right. Exactly.
And I think this is where Oswald's analysis gets to the heart of leadership. You know, even the most, like, righteous leaders, they have enemies.
Right.
People who will challenge their authority or create instability.
Yeah.
And sometimes, as uncomfortable as it might be, justice demands action, you know, decisive action.
Yeah. And Solomon doesn't shy away from those tough decisions.
Oh, he doesn't.
He has Adonijah executed for trying to marry Abishag, David's, you know, former concubine.
Right.
I mean, that seems harsh. Was that really necessary?
It's easy to judge through our modern lens, but you have to remember.
Right.
In that time and culture, marrying the king's concubine.
Yeah.
It was seen as this, like, direct challenge to the throne. Yeah. A way of, like, claiming power. So Oswald points out that Solomon, by acting swiftly and decisively, was actually demonstrating his commitment to maintaining order and stability in the kingdom.
So he's removing those potential threats.
Exactly.
Consolidating his power.
Right.
He also deals with Abiathar. Right. Removing for the priesthood.
Right.
And has Joab killed. I mean, it seems like he's ruthlessly fulfilling all of David's final wishes.
Yeah. There's definitely a sense of, like, ruthlessness there, but also I think a real fruit understanding of the dynamics of power at play. You know, Oswald argues that Solomon, in these actions, he wasn't just being vindictive. He was establishing his authority.
Okay.
Demonstrating that he was willing to uphold the law, even when it meant going against really powerful individuals.
That's a harsh lesson, but, like, a vital one for a new king.
Totally.
Navigating this complex political landscape.
Absolutely.
It's a side of Solomon we don't often hear about.
Right.
The pragmatic, even ruthless side.
Yeah, alongside the wisdom, right?
Alongside the wisdom. Yeah, it makes me think about how leadership often requires making these really tough choices.
Right.
Choices that aren't always popular or easy.
Totally.
Do you think there are like lessons here for us today?
Absolutely. I think Oswald's deep dive into these events really challenges us to think about the complexities of leadership, you know, the balance between justice and mercy and the consequences of our actions, both intended and unintended.
Yeah.
It also prompts us to consider how we use our own influence, right? Yeah. Whether it's in our families, our workplaces, or our communities.
Right.
Are we acting out of this genuine desire to serve?
Yeah.
Or are our actions driven by, you know, ego or ambition or personal gain?
So much to ponder. It seems like Solomon's rise to power was anything but a straightforward tale.
Oh, yeah. It was anything but.
It was this mix of, you know, divine choice.
Right.
Political maneuvering.
Yes.
Human ambition.
Totally.
And some, you know, pretty brutal decisions.
Right. And I think that's what makes the story so fascinating.
Yeah.
It's so relevant. You know, it's not this simple morality tale. It's messy. It's complex.
Yeah.
It really reflects the realities of leadership and the human condition itself, you know?
Yeah.
It also highlights that mystery of how God works.
Right.
How he chooses to accomplish his purposes through flawed individuals and seemingly chaotic events.
I think what really stays with me after this deep dive is that question that Oswald keeps coming back to, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What does it say about God that he chooses to work through these messy situations?
Mm-hmm.
It challenges my assumptions about how I think God should operate, you know?
I know what you mean.
And honestly, it gives me a sense of hope.
Me too. It suggests that God isn't bound by our, like, human understanding of order and perfection.
Yeah.
You know, he can use our mistakes, our missteps, even our, like, darkest moments.
Right.
To bring about something good. And that, I think, is a truly remarkable and inspiring truth.
It is a truth worth reflecting on.
Absolutely.
And it reminds us that even in the midst of, you know, chaos and uncertainty, there's a larger story unfolding.
Totally.
A story that we all have a part to play.